This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, reminding you each time that no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are indeed heroes around you, men and sometimes women too, who have done remarkable things, survived against incredible odds, all for the sake of our freedom. If you're a regular listener to Hometown Heroes, you've heard about so many different aspects of World War II, but for many Americans, knowledge of that war has concentrated on a couple key dates, like December 7th, 1941, or the one we just marked the 70th anniversary of, June 6th, 1944, a huge commemoration in France, of course, ceremonies all over the world to mark what was famously and aptly dubbed the longest day. And we're going to make that the focus again today before jumping into a Navajo Code Talkers story next time. Before we get underway, I want to welcome a few new stations to our list of affiliates carrying Hometown Heroes now. KFIV Power Talk 1360 in Modesto, California. KIVA 95.9 and 1600 AM, the Rock of Talk in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And KWSX Power Talk 1280 in Stockton, California. Welcome and glad to have you on board. Hometown Heroes exists for the purpose of honoring our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserving their stories so they won't be forgotten, and along the way, of course, we learn so much history through the eyes of those who lived it. We're educated, sometimes inspired, and we certainly understand a little better the price that has been paid for our freedom. On June 6th, 1944, that price was an extremely heavy one. Add up the American, Canadian, and British troops that hit the shores of Normandy that day, and there were more than 150,000. That doesn't even count the air support, naval forces, and other elements participating in a massive operation. 2,500 Americans died on D-Day alone. And of course, the fight was not over with that longest day. There are nearly 9,400 Americans buried in Normandy cemeteries. Over the years, I've had the privilege of interviewing many veterans who were there that day, from Coast Guardsmen taking troops ashore to engineers sneaking in to set explosive charges, nurses treating the wounded, airmen bombing from up above, sailors providing artillery support for the Rangers scaling Point du Hoc, glider pilots landing behind enemy lines. And as we reflect again on D-Day this week after marking that 70th anniversary, I wanted to share with you pieces of the tales from a couple special paratroopers I met in El Paso, Texas. Airborne troops had among the toughest of jobs in Operation Overlord, and they bore a disproportionately costly burden. During the entire course of the Normandy operation, between the All-American 82nd Airborne and the Screamin' Eagles of the 101st, there were over 2,000 killed, more than 5,000 wounded, and another 1,500 paratroopers missing or captured. You talk about treacherous duty, that was it. So let's get an idea of the kind of men we had jumping behind enemy lines. We're going to hear from two men who called themselves brothers, starting with retired Lieutenant Colonel Bob Chisholm. He enlisted at 17, saw a couple paratroopers in their jumpsuits doing jujitsu, thought that looked cool, and volunteered for airborne duty. Was still just 17 when he finished jump school at Fort Benning, and nearly 30 years later would end up as one of a select few who can claim the Triple Combat Infantry Badge, because he fought in combat conditions in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. We'll work our way toward D-Day with Bob, who felt the training he received with the 82nd Airborne's 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment played a big role in his survival.
We had some of the finest officers and NCOs that the Army ever produced. In particular, one that will always be in my mind is Lieutenant Colonel Louis G. Mendez. He was our battalion commander. And I think that because of the training that we'd received from him and emphasis on the task in front of us and in preparation for it, that I'm here today. And I think you'll probably hear that again later. But in the time that we were ready to go into Normandy, I think without exception that most of the troopers in the regiment were ready to go, because that's what we've been training for. We look forward to it. I don't recall ever having any anxiety at all about it.
Too young and dumb to know any better at 18 years old?
Too young and dumb, yeah. And well trained. Well, this is what we're trained for. Such an extensive program that physically and mentally you were ready. You thought that you were the best. And as far as we were concerned, we were the best. We were the elite. This is what we've been training to do. let's go and do it.
I also imagine that every time June 6th rolls around, you reflect back on it. So I'm guessing your memory of that day is still pretty sharp. How early did that day start for you?
Well, it actually started on June the 5th. I think around 10:30 in the evening, we boarded the planes. We'd had one delay, of course, one day delay, and we boarded the planes. We took off from our airfield and circled and joined with the rest of the flights. I think the best I can remember is we were out of the plane at about 1:37.
Pitch black.
No, there was actually just clouds. There was moon out and there's clouds.
Moon and clouds, and you could probably see some other aircraft around?
Well, yes, all the aircraft in our flight. As we approached, as we passed over the Guernsey Islands, we caught some flak there. And then as we passed over the Normandy coast, we began to get flak, and we ran into the clouds. And the planes, not the ones in my particular V, but the other planes began to disperse. And consequently, when we jumped, our Pathfinders had not been able to set up their equipment. So we then jumped on the green light of the pilot where he thought we should be. And it wasn't, I didn't land on our designated DZ or landing zone. In fact, when I landed, I didn't know where I was at. I didn't recognize the terrain around me at all. And the hedgerows. And I had a little problem getting out of my chute. And I had to take my knife that I had strapped to my leg and cut myself out of my chute. Walked out to the road, and this is a thing that you're not taught not to do, is stay on the road. Anyway, I walked down the road, and the first I heard was a motorcycle coming down. I knew we didn't have any motorcycles, and so it was a German motorcycle, a sidecar, and opened fire on them, knocked them out, and kept walking, came up on a glider, looked in the glider, and everybody in the glider was dead. Walked a little while further into St. Mary Glees, and I saw John Steele hanging from the tower in St. Mary Glees. So that was the 3rd Battalion of the 05 had the objective of taking St. Mary Glees. They were there, and so I stayed with G Company of the 05 for the first 4 days until we got together more of the 508.
And folks who've seen the movie The Longest Day know John Steele. When you say you saw John Steele hanging there, he's the paratrooper whose parachute caught on the back steeple of the church. He was hanging there for 2 hours pretending to be dead. He was eventually captured by the Germans but then escaped and rejoined his division.
As you describe that, as you come down, you have problems with your chute, you have to cut yourself out. Now, I'm hearing that you were all by yourself at this point?
I was all by myself, yep.
And you're 18 years old.
I'm 18 years old.
Behind enemy lines on D-Day, June 6, 1944. Did it hit you? Well, how difficult the situation you were in? Or were you just running on adrenaline? I mean, what was that like to be an 18-year-old in those kind of circumstances?
The only thought that I had at that time was to get together with the other members of my unit and get the mission accomplished that we were given. I don't think that the severity of the situation really struck me until we were in the trenches dug by the Germans outside of St. Mary Glees and had an 81 mortar position sitting there. And the 81 mortar position fired off a couple of rounds. These were the 505. And they drew fire from an 88 and killed everyone in that mortar position. And that's when it struck me that, well, you can get hurt doing this. And that was the first time. It dawned on me how serious the situation was.
I want to ask you, just to go back a little bit, before you jumped out of that airplane in the dark of night on this historic day, did you take a moment to pray, to reflect, to think? Do you remember anything that might have flashed through your mind before you made that jump out of that airplane on a day that would change your life and really change the history of the world?
I don't recall that I prayed at prior to the jump. I might have in the plane. I was raised in a religious family, and I probably did. I don't recall specifically that I did. I was the number 2 man in the stick behind my platoon leader. I was his radio operator. So he was standing in the door watching our flight as we passed over the coast, and he could see some of the flak that the planes were getting. Really, the only thought was, let's get out of the plane, get it over with, get on the ground, and get going on our mission.
And I'm just imagining that every hour brought another situation you'd never faced before in your life, and you have to be pretty adaptable in those circumstances. Pick it up where you left off, and because you're still behind enemy lines, you met up with some of your fellow Americans. that are fighting the Germans there. What did you encounter next?
The 3rd Battalion of the 05 was holding a pretty strategic position there in St. Mary Glees, because this was a key road junction. And the only way the Germans could get reinforcements down toward the beach was to pass through St. Mary Glees. So the Germans attacked St. Mary Glees on several occasions, and we were involved in fighting off the attack, defending against them, which we did. So it was several days that I was with them, with the 505, we had been subjected to attacks by the German and defending position. Then I began to meet up with more of the troopers from the 508 and left the 05 and rejoined our unit.
All right, so there was still a long way to go for what you would encounter. This is the first day of the invasion that you described for us, and moving forward, you meet up with some of the guys that you knew before. And I'm sure that the stories started to come your way about guys who hadn't been as fortunate as you. Did it start to weigh on you, the losses that you knew had been suffered in that first jump on June 6th?
No, at that particular time, I wasn't aware of any losses. I had not had any conversation with anyone that said, we lost so-and-so or lost so-and-so. The actual knowledge of the losses would come on a day-to-day basis later when we actually got involved in attacking our objectives. And then you would actually see some of those that you had been friends with through the training years become casualties. And that began to impact on you. And then you begin to realize how serious this whole thing was, that this was really a pretty dangerous operation, and people were getting killed, and it could happen to you.
And how constant was it for you? Did you ever find time to get a little break, or were you always on edge? Did you never have a chance to relax a little bit in that situation?
I don't recall ever having relaxed a minute from the time that we jumped into Normandy until the time that I was wounded and evacuated through medical channels. Yeah, and you stayed on the edge all the time, and you the adrenaline was flowing, and this was very helpful to you too, because it kept you more you became more alert, and realized that this was a situation that could result in your death, and so you better stay sharp. You better remember everything that you'd been taught during your training. So that was a constant reminder of just how serious the situation was.
Well, you kind of answered my next question, which was, how did you keep from cracking up in a situation like that, from staying focused and being able to do your job? And you talk about that adrenaline and staying alert. Do you think, was there one thing, one concept, one idea that maybe had been shared with you in training, or just one aspect of your personality and the way you were equipped that you think helped you get through it?
Well, I think that the training that we had taken and been exposed to was the major factor in your mental attitude in combat. We had received the best training, I think, that any individual could probably possibly get. The mere fact that we were paratroopers and that we were expected to be able to do more than your average soldier. This had been really emphasized during all our training, that you're airborne, you're paratroopers, you're the elite, you're the best, and that's the way we expect you to be. And that's the way we were. I think initially, and then on during the entire campaign with the airborne. Now, don't misunderstand me. After that initial contact, especially seeing that the mortar crew being killed, it stayed in your mind just how serious the situation was, and then you begin to feel that fear. And that's not something that I had it to begin with. There just wasn't anything that bothered me to that point. But with each day of combat, you become a little more fearful. And the only thing that kept me going, and I'm sure that you'll hear this again, that kept the others going, I would rather have anything happen to me than to let my buddies down. That was a driving force. That pretty much predominated throughout a lot of individuals.
Just knowing that someone else was depending on you, so it's one thing to let yourself down, but if you let them down, then you're doing everybody a disservice?
That's exactly right. I would have preferred to have been killed than to have let my buddies down.
Yep, that's the kind of individual that was jumping behind enemy lines on D-Day 70 years ago. We're going to get more of Bob Chisholm's story when we come back. We'll find out what saved his life after he was wounded, and we'll also hear from another D-Day paratrooper as well. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.